Bloomington City Council member Jamie Matthey says he'd like to see mental health workers go along with cops and emergency service workers to respond to people experiencing a psychiatric, behavioral, or substance abuse crisis. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. Small towns in McLean County would love to have pandemic relief money.
What's kind of frustrating is that this money is there, and I don't know why the governor's office isn't following through and getting proper documentation in.
Lexington alone would get $250,000 to help businesses and improve infrastructure. Plus, Bloomington Council member Jen Correa will move out of the ward and resign, and hear a light and lovely look at lavender. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. It's a developer's dream. Illinois State University decommissioned the Shelbourne Apartments and surrounding 26 acres in Normal back in 2017. Now, university spokesperson Eric Jomey says trustees will decide Friday whether to label the property surplus.
That would allow the university to initiate a process of selling that property. Part of that sale process would include an appraisal of the fair market value of that property.
For decades, universities were reluctant to get rid of land they no longer needed because they had to turn the money from a sale over to the state general fund. The Property Control Act now allows universities like ISU to keep the money as long as they use it on deferred maintenance and emergency repairs. The 101-unit apartment complex formerly held graduate students and student family housing. ISU says the strategic value of the property does not outweigh the cost to develop it. Central Illinois car dealers say they have only 5% of the vehicles they would usually have on their lots at this time of year. A global microchip shortage is the largest reason for the supply problem. Dealers in Lincoln, Eureka, and Bloomington say manufacturers like General Motors or Ford can build vehicles but lack the chips to make them run. Andy Traeger of Barker Motor in Bloomington says the auto shortage will last longer than the microchip supply issue.
If by some miracle we had all the microchips at a snap of a finger overnight, now we have to get them installed in the vehicles, and then we have to get those vehicles to the dealerships, and that can take some time.
Traeger says he's unsure when there will be a normal flow of vehicles again. He says another supply limit is manufacturers can ship only a dozen vehicles per semi-load. Dealers say their service departments are doing more repairs on older vehicles because new ones aren't available, but they say that doesn't replace the income lost from new vehicle sales. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth says Congress needs to get the National Guard reimbursed for the $500 million it spent responding to the January 6th insurrection on Capitol Hill. Duckworth says it does a disservice to service members and states to allow the issue to fester.
I mean, we spent all this time thanking them for their service, and yet we can't bother to pay them simply because one half of the United States Senate decided that January 6th didn't happen and don't refuse to acknowledge that. It's obscene.
The Illinois National Guard says it will be forced to ground aircraft, furlough civilian employees, and suspend training exercises if $31 million in reimbursements do not come through by the end of this month. Money swept from other accounts funded the deployments, but federal law requires the money to be repaid. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM. WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Kirsten Miner.
Now that I have my hearing aids, like almost every single social interaction is so much easier and there's so much less stress around it because I can actually like hear and interact better with them.
Kirsten's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Smaller cities and towns in Illinois don't know when they'll get their federal funding through the American Rescue Plan. Illinois is one of 11 states that hasn't applied for the funding on behalf of communities with fewer than 50,000 residents. Lexington Mayor Spencer Johansson chairs the McLean County Mayor's Association. Johansson tells Eric Stock, Lexington saw a 10% drop in sales tax revenue, but online sales helped trim the shortfall. Lexington is waiting on $250,000 in COVID relief. Johansson says that's better than the worst-case scenarios the city had to prepare for.
I guess the unknown It would be an easy answer because I didn't know how long the complete shutdown was going to last and how it would affect us. You know, what was personally hurtful, I guess, to me, or depressing was, you know, we've come a long way in Lexington in building up our businesses in town since I've been on the council and since I've been mayor. I'm not taking credit for it. It's because I've got a good council to work with. But, you know, prior to COVID, I remember just when I'd go home for lunch, I'd look down and up and down Main Street and, you know, cars, just it was, the town was packed with cars, you know, people eating and shopping and stuff. And I remember a couple of days after the initial shutdown, I was up here working and I went to go home for lunch and I looked up and down Main Street and there wasn't one car parked on Main Street. And it was, you know, I almost cried, to be honest with you. I mean, it was just so, you know, so depressing that, you know, we worked so hard to build this up and then, you know, something like this just takes it all away.
So municipalities can use funds from the American Rescue Plan to get reimbursements for COVID-related spending and replacing lost tax revenue due to the pandemic. What might the city of Lexington be looking for some recovery?
I think what we're focusing on is how to help our businesses out. And we haven't really sit down and because we don't know when we're going to get the money yet. So we haven't really sit down and come up with formulated a plan. But I think what I would use it for would be to economic support for the small businesses and helping new businesses that are interested in coming to Lexington. I think that's essential. That's one of the things we can use it for. But as far as lost revenue, I think if I understand it right, and you know, there's a whole different format. If you're going to use it for lost revenue, you have to fill out, you have to go through, and I don't know that it's worth the amount that we lost. And it, like I said, we had no furloughs, no layoffs, or anything like that. So I think we'll use it to help the current businesses out and bring new businesses to town.
Now, the money can also be used for water, sewer, broadband infrastructure, in addition to offering bonuses to essential workers, those types of things. Anything there that might be on Lexington's list beyond simply helping the businesses in the community?
Yeah, and we've got a couple of projects on the table right now. For instance, I mentioned the post office. We're going to have to put new, you know, water and sewer line in for that, and so some of that we'll probably use for that. Once we get the initial cost estimate to put that stuff in, we'll probably use some of it for that. But you know what what's kind of frustrating is that this money is there, and I don't know why. The governor's not, you know, or the governor's office isn't following through and getting the proper documentation into the federal government.
Have you been given any indication from the Pritzker administration about what the holdup is?
No. We've been working with the Illinois Municipal League, and they've been keeping us posted, and I think they're as frustrated as we are. They're constantly working with the governor's administration trying to get the ball rolling on this. You know, I told somebody, it's almost like, you know, you're waiting for a birthday card from your uncle, aunt and uncle, you know, and you know there's going to be a check in there, but you don't know how much it's going to be, and you don't want to complain because it's basically money that we didn't have before.
And as you said, Lexington has done fairly well given the circumstances. As chair of the McLean County Mayors Association, I imagine you have kind of a sense for how some other small communities are navigating this situation. Anything that stands out to you as far as some of the challenges that they have faced?
Well, I don't know about their revenue loss, but I think there's something about the smaller communities where, and I'm not saying Bloomington Normal didn't do this or any other larger city, but I think we have more flexibility in the smaller communities to help the businesses than what the larger city does, because we have less businesses, of course. But I think all of these communities that I've dealt with the McLean County Mayor's Association, you know, they reached out to help their businesses out, and I think they all did fairly decent. I don't want to say that like we don't need the money, but I think, you know, they survived it. There was loss of revenue, but I think everybody was optimistic that we're going to get over this and we're going to move through it, and things are going to get back into shape again. So I think everybody had that same attitude, and I don't know if any any community that I've dealt with that suffered so much that they had to lay anybody off, or I don't think any of them did.
That was Lexington Mayor Spencer Johansson with Eric Stock. A spokesperson for Governor J.B. Pritzker says the state plans to set up its program to get funding to municipalities soon. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington Police and Fire deal with a lot of calls involving people experiencing a psychiatric, behavioral, or substance abuse crisis. Now, City Council member Jamie Mathey wants Bloomington to join a growing number of cities rethinking the emergency response model. This week, Mathey put up for discussion a plan to send mental health crisis counselors out on calls alongside police and EMS. The hope is to keep more people out of the ER and jail. In this interview with Ryan Denham, Mathey says it sprang from his conversation with Bloomington Fire about caring for those experiencing homelessness. He says they talked about pairing up with PATH Crisis Center more often. Mathey says it's a funding issue because PATH doesn't have the money on its own to put a bunch of counselors on call 24/7.
If PATH can't have somebody on staff 24/7 right now, what's the next solution? And that just kind of got the ball rolling from in my head. You know, we had the Black Lives Matter group that demanded that funding be cut by 50% by 2024. My personal belief is that's not realistic. However, that doesn't mean the idea and the concept behind it of saying, are we sending police officers into situations where an armed officer is not necessarily warranted or needed or might actually make the situation worse? Is that happening in Bloomington? I don't know right now. Let's start a trial program. Let's get numbers and data that we can analyze when it's done to say, were we successful? Were we not successful?
There are a lot of communities that are talking about this, a few that have done this. Is there anybody in your mind that you're using as a model for this? Any communities our size even that have gone this far?
Denver's bigger than us, and they're probably the lead at trying this right now. Oregon has several different communities that are trying it right now. I think Eugene is probably the one that is closest in size to Bloomington. And there's different results and stuff that are going on, because Eugene is trying a model where they're sending a crisis counselor instead of police. What I had originally proposed as a balance between the two sides of the argument of, we need the police officers, we don't need the police officers, was let's send the crisis counselor and the police officer to work together as a team. So it's a little bit different than what Eugene is doing, but it's going down that same path of let the crisis counselor take the lead and have the police there as the emergency backup if needed.
This thing costs money, and as you said, cannabis tax revenue may be an option for something like this. Does the city even know yet? I mean, how much money that's even bringing in?
The simple answer is we don't know how much money yet. If we look at estimates between what the town of Normal has gotten, it's the same corporation, right? You know, assume that after the legalization that roughly there's going to be the same amount of purchases across Bloomington and Normal. Maybe that's somewhere in the neighborhood between 300 and 400,000. That's probably enough to pay for four counselors from PATH and get them the training that they need and brought up to speed.
Well, there has been some movement on this at the state level. State lawmakers have passed this Community Emergency Support Services Act. It lays out the rules for how emergency responders, must coordinate with something new that's going on between federal and state governments, this effort to create a better emergency response system that's like better equipped to deal with folks experiencing a mental or behavioral health crisis. So would this state proposal that I just mentioned, if that does get signed into law by the governor, does that sort of deal with your concerns and your idea? Did you just shelf that then or what?
Absolutely. It would completely supersede everything. The state lawmakers, it had been something they had kind of talked about in the background, but it went from talking about it to passed it, and they passed it and sent it to the governor on June 28th. The governor hasn't signed it yet, but if he does, it completely supersedes anything from my proposal, which is why council last night said, let's table this and wait to see what the governor does. The CESA Act would say that we can't do a co-responder model, which is what I was suggesting. It says that we have to send crisis counselors instead of police or fire into the appropriate situation, and it provides funding for it too.
That's Bloomington City Council member Jamie Matthews speaking with Ryan Denham. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington City Council member Jen Carrillo has found a new home. That move will force Carrillo to resign from the council. Carrillo says they couldn't find a home in Ward 6 after their apartment lease expired. Carrillo served on the council a little over 2 years. They tell Eric Stock, Mayor Mboka Mwilambwe, and the council should appoint someone who shares Carrillo's values to serve the last year and 8 months of the term.
I am, very interested in making sure that the vacancy that I will create is replaced by somebody who shares my values. I'm unclear about, prior similar circumstances and the ways that prior administrations may have handled it. But I do think that the people of Ward 6 deserve to be represented by someone who embodies the values that they came out to vote for 2 years ago.
In what way will you try to do that?
I'm already consulting with community members who may have an interest in the vacancy, and will certainly be making my recommendations to the mayor. I am hopeful that they will take them into account as they figure out who to nominate to take my place.
When did it become clear to you that finding a new place in Ward 6 just wasn't possible?
Yeah, so in early May is when I got word, after kind of being told that I would be able to renew my lease for another year, that was not going to be the case and that the house was going to be sold. And, I knew it was going to be tough because I have had to look for a new apartment many times, but never could I have imagined what I actually ended up finding once I started looking, which was, a housing crisis in every sense of the word. So apartments that were being rented out minutes after they were posted, such a tremendous scarcity in terms of what was available, like maybe seeing, just a handful of things come up per week for the whole city, really. And just, a lot of subpar housing going for, exorbitant rates. And so I started looking into the possibility of perhaps buying a home, but even there, the pickings were pretty slim and the prices are very high, and it was definitely looking tough there for a second. I thought that I might end up on somebody's couch.
What does this say about the housing situation, the need for affordable and middle-income housing in the community?
I mean, certainly the situation is not good, and you can only imagine how this is going to explode after, people start facing eviction once the moratorium is completely up. So that's a very scary thing, and housing was one of my campaign issues, so certainly I know that it has been a need in this community for far too long, have worked at a state level to try to establish rent control measures to start to begin to equalize the playing field a bit. The other thing, Eric, that I think this points to is just the ways that our system is not created to support low-income people and middle-income people. This is not a problem that any of my fellow council members are having. And, the vast majority of the people who have been on council are people of a certain financial socioeconomic status. I do think that's something that I'm going to ask my colleagues to address.
So what is next for you?
Well, I am excited to take a brief break from politics, although, there's really no getting away with it as a person of color and a queer person in this community. But I am looking forward to learning about, primer and window replacements and all the cool stuff that comes along with homeownership.
Have you thought about how you might reappear in the public space, or are you even thinking about that now?
Certainly, I think the ward that I'll be moving into is Ward 4, and I think Ward 4 has great representation in Zulie Emig, so I have no plans to throw my hat in that ring. But the opportunity around Ward 6, I think, very much found me, and I have every confidence that whatever the next opportunity is, will find me. But for now, no plans for some grand reentry.
What stands out for you about your 2+ years on the council? Wins, losses, lessons learned?
Certainly I'm very proud of like the collective work that I have done with the community in my time on council. I think that probably the highlight for me was the way that we were able to fight for and establish a direct aid program for residents through the pandemic. I am really glad that I was in office when that happened, because even though now it's a thing that other council members and just in the public, we talk about like, oh, this is a normal thing that was always going to happen. People were vehemently opposed to it. People on the council were vehemently opposed to a direct aid program. But, the organizing that took place in the community, as well as the allies that these groups had on council, I think, ended up set us up to have a win there.
That's outgoing Bloomington City Council member Jen Carrillo with Eric Stock. Carrillo's term on the council will end August 31st. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Lavender has long been understood to have calming properties, and who among us couldn't use a little calm? Jean Howard runs Two Sisters Lavender Farm, a U-Pick operation on land located between Leroy and Farmer City. The land has been in Howard's family for generations. Howard began cultivating lavender there after 30 years as a teacher and researcher at Illinois State University. Much of her work centered around the impact of loss and trauma in children. And in this conversation with Sarah Nardi, Howard says growing lavender felt like a healing alternative.
I loved my work at ISU. I loved the work that we did trying to help families understand how to help children that they fostered or adopted who had experienced sometimes almost incredible loss and difficulty in their lives. But even though I was only studying it, I was not a family member of these children. I was not a therapist with these children. I was a researcher studying how to help these families. There was a cost, when you hear about sorrow, even when you also see gain, there's a cost to your soul a bit. And after many, many years of doing that work, again, which I loved, I wanted something very different as I approached retirement. My mother passed away, and the farm became ours, and I decided I wanted to do something that would calm my soul and be good for other people, too. So after a while of imagining what to do, my husband and I started a lavender farm. And I tell you, even during the pandemic, it was so peaceful and calming to be working out there and have that incredible fragrance and the beauty of the lavender. And even when the flowers are gone, the plants smell so wonderful. And it's a tonic. It's a tonic for the soul. It's a tonic. It's a tonic for the soul.
It sounds like it. It really does. But you said it hasn't been without its challenges growing lavender. And it sounds like you faced some real ups and downs throughout the past several growing seasons.
That's absolutely true. We went into this because a friend of mine in Oregon said anybody can grow lavender. And I thought, well, good, I'll try it. And anybody can grow lavender in Oregon, maybe. But in central Illinois, it's a much bigger challenge. We've had droughts that killed almost everything. We've had a fungus that came with plants that we bought and almost destroyed everything. We've had that terrible polar vortex a few years ago, which killed 98% of our plants. But I tell you, it's so beautiful and it's so peaceful that we keep trying again and again. I don't know if we're brave or foolish, but it's just it feels like the right thing to do. And this summer, we had a number of events where people could come out and join us at the farm and pick their own lavender. And I could tell it was doing good for other people, too. We had over 1,000 people, and it was families, and it was friends from the university, and it was, all kinds of people, young and old. And they just got such happiness from being out in the lavender field picking lavender. It was just wonderful. So despite the challenges, I think we'll continue because it just brings too much happiness.
You know, it kind of reminds me of an aphorism from existentialist philosophy. One must imagine Sisyphus happy, you know, rolling the rock up the hill only to have it roll back down again. And it sounds like you might have found a real catharsis in this lavender farming, despite the challenges inherent in it.
What a beautiful aphorism that is. I think that's true. You know, my grandparents who lived through all kinds of difficulties, and my own parents who lived through the Depression and, you know, World War II and all of that, they all seem to believe that there's no good without struggle, that struggle is necessary. And so maybe I'll apply that to my lavender farm, because goodness knows we've had plenty of struggle. But I think it's worth it.
That's Jean Howard speaking with WGLT's Sarah Nardi. Howard says, although the lavender is past its prime at the farm, Two Sisters Lavender will be at the Bloomington Farmers Market through August. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.